this meeting of the California Regional Water Quality Control Board Mahanton Region meeting to order. My name is Dr. Amy Horn. I live in Truckee, and I'm the board chair. I want to thank members of the public who have disappeared many times for coming to our meeting. There are other members of the public. We do a better job when you participate in the issues that come before us. At this time, I would like to introduce the other members of the regional board. At the far end, we have Keith Dias from Rosamond. Next to him is Eric Sandell from Truckee. Kimberly Cox from Hellendale. And being unsociable at the other end of the table are Peter Pumphrey from Chalfont and Don Jardine from Markleyville. The executive officer is Patty Kuyumjin. Would you please introduce the staff?
Good afternoon, everyone. We have Rebecca Phillips here from the Victor office, who's our board clerk today. Kim Niemeyer, our from Sacramento, our attorney. Lori Kemper, our assistant executive officer. Bruce Warden, next to her from our Tahoe office. We have Richard Booth from our Tahoe office. Mike Plazek, who's our division manager in the Victorville office. We have Ann Holden from our Tahoe office. Patrice Copeland, one of our supervisors from the Victorville office. Jan Zimmerman, also from our Victorville office. Doug Smith, one of our division manager from the Tahoe office. Lisa Dernbach, I saw here earlier, from our office in Tahoe. Esther Tracy, who's joining us from the State Board and will be helping us facilitate. And Doug Cushman is here as well from our Tahoe office. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a very full schedule this meeting, and so we want to hear everyone's comments and get everything out on the record, but we also must use our time wisely. So if you wish to speak on an agenda item, please fill out one of these orange cards, which you can find in the back of the room, indicating which item you wish to address and how many minutes you need. Although we do not administer an oath in most proceedings before this board, we expect all statements made to be truthful, with no attempts to mislead or present be deceptive or failure to include essential information. We also ask that you obey our ground rules, which are to treat everyone with respect. In the interest of everyone's time, please communicate your ideas clearly and efficiently. And so that we can develop an accurate administrative record, we ask that you speak only after you are recognized, and at that time, come to the lectern in the center here and speak to the agenda item. If you do not follow these rules or become repetitious, I may ask you to sit down. Anyone aggrieved by an action or inaction of the regional board may petition the State Water Resources Control Board to review the decision. That petition must be received within 30 days of the regional board's meeting at which the action was taken. Board staff can help you find those regulations if you're interested in filing a petition, and you can also find them on the State Water Resources Control Board's website. With that, we'll go to the first item, which is a public forum. We don't have any public forum on the cards so far. So with that, we'll move right into the second item, which is whether to adopt the minutes from the September meeting.
Move the minutes.
Second.
So moved by Jardine, seconded by Ms. Cox. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone abstain?
Abstain.
Mr. Sandell abstains. Thank you. Now we move into reports. We have a lot, actually, of reports this time. Why don't we start, Mr. Dias, do you have any report?
No, thank you.
Mr. Sandell?
No, I don't.
Ms. Cox?
None at this time.
Mr. Jardine?
None.
Mr. Pumphrey?
Just a couple things. When we were in Bishop in June and talked with the Inyomono Deerwimp about their disadvantaged communities project and subsequent report, I have a copy. The report is done. It's on their website. I have a copy for us. And then there's going to be a follow-up workshop in December of convening all of the Irwins that were participants in a disadvantaged community grant project. And they're going to gather together for 3 days and talk about what they found out and what they learned. And then in the second half of the 3 days, they've invited a number of people from Sacramento and also from the various regions to come in and see if they can come out of that with a disadvantaged community strategy aimed at influencing decisions that are made in Sacramento, aimed at trying to come up with a approach to utilizing money from the Prop 1 bond. And so I think it's a really good, serious follow-up, and I'm going to attend that. And so I'll let you know what happens with that. Then the other thing is I just wanted you to all know, this is way in advance, but there is going to be another Sierra Water Works Work Group Water Summit. It's in August next year, and instead of a three-day overview summit, it's going to be a one-day intensive workshop, which is going to be basically aimed at taking highlight issues from the last two summits and really boring down deeply into those to try to come up with some kind of, again, white paper strategy, the theme of which is going to be protecting our water. So it's going to focus on in-stream uses and headwater protections. It will be in Kings Beach, California, and I believe it's August 17th. So that's a save-the-date kind of thing.
Is that all?
That I know of.
Okay.
If there's more, let me know.
Okay. Well, there's a lot to report from the most recent WQCC that was held in early October in Sacramento. First thing to know is that there are tentative dates for the next WQCC. They're actually just waiting for us to tell them what dates we prefer. They've set aside the week of October 26th to October 30th. That's a Monday through Friday. And I just wanted to get a sense of, from the board, if you had any preference within those dates for attending WQCC. As our schedule is tentative for the next year, we have no board meeting in the month of October. So I don't know if that influences anyone's thinking on that. While everyone's checking their calendar.
If for me, I think earlier in the week would be preferable.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I could do either. Okay. Thank you. There's talk about doing WQCC differently next year. So far, every WQCC I have been to has been a lot of information sharing. But a question came out of the last chair's conference call about whether WQC is limited to information sharing or whether all of those regional board members being in the same room could get some work done of various kinds. And the answer from Lori Okun is, yes, we can do things that are advisory in nature. We cannot do things that are legally binding. So some ideas include we could work on ideas for additional authority that we need to implement a policy. I'm thinking, I always get frustrated with the invitation to offer ideas for legislation. But it seems to me that maybe if we put our heads together on something that we could come up with some ideas for legislation or additional tools that we need, either from that tools that all the regions need, that the state board could help us develop. A lot of the regions are working on streamlining permitting So that one idea that was thrown out. We can coordinate policy among boards, and we could develop a strategy for an issue. Those are just examples of the kinds of advisory things that we could do at WQCC. So if you have any ideas, please pass them along to me. Oh, another idea is that we could have concurrent sessions. So, and the one that seems to be gaining the most traction is to have concurrent sessions, one for just like an hour and a half out of the two-day meeting, where the rural regional boards could get together and work on an issue that they're interested in, and the urban regional boards could get together and work on an issue that they're interested in. We could do coastal boards and mountain boards or desert boards, or I mean, we could split any old way we want. But just it was frustrating this time in that when trying to get all nine boards up to say something in a short period of time means everybody got 5 minutes to get up and talk, and it was you can't say much in 5 minutes. Ideas for things to work on at the next WQCC, and if you have any other ideas, please let me know. But what's been thrown out so far is getting an update on the groundwater policy and how it's being implemented. DWR has the main responsibility early in the development of the policy, so the idea would be to have DWR come and report to us about what they've done. Work on water recycling and reuse, desalinization, climate change, permit streamlining, and the perpetually interesting topic, roles and responsibilities of the regional board and the state board. So in your packet, you have the handouts that our staff put together, and I have to say they were big hits with everyone at WQCC. The first one that we have is Bud's write-up on the Bijou Erosion Control Project. And then there was, who wrote up this one? I'm not sure who did. But our enforcement, Scott wrote up the enforcement sheet. And then we have our two-page summary of our accomplishments and priority accomplishments in this past year and our priorities for the coming year. Steve Moore, state board member, is interested in starting developing a wetland action plan. The idea is to pick three areas throughout the state and develop a wetland action plan for three areas to be more proactive instead of reactive when it comes to restoring wetlands. So you have a copy of his PowerPoint. Pete, did you have anything you wanted to say about this PowerPoint?
Well, I just wanted to say that I thought this was a really interesting PowerPoint presentation and discussion, and it locked in a lot on coastal wetlands. The discussion seems to be an outgrowth, really, of the California, and I can't remember what it's called, but it's the plan that was generated as the California strategy to deal with climate change. And so you can find some of the early features of this discussion. It's trying to talk about ways in which wetlands, among other things, can serve a purpose in trying to deal with climate change. And the thing that got my attention was the little star on the map of California that's over where we live, or at least where I live. And the idea of talking about high mountain meadows as being useful as water storage mechanisms in the event that the predicted decline in snowpack takes place, is there a way that those meadows can play a role in replacing, at least to some extent, that storage capacity that the snowpack traditionally serves? And so I'm really hopeful that if they do pick some kind of set of circumstances to highlight, that they will pick one, the high mountain meadows, as one of those things. I think it's really important And I think it's really important to have people start to look at these meadows, and in fact the whole headwaters question, not as just a question of scenery or isn't that nice, but as a really vital component to the California water system and particularly the water storage issues. So, you know, I hope we're able to go forward with that. I had a chance to talk to Felicia and to Fran, Spidey Weber, about that concept. So I hope we can gain some traction over here for us.
And then probably the most popular presentation was by Felicia Marcos, who gave an overview of the drought in 2014. So just some highlights of that. There's the fourth slide in the PowerPoint on page 2 shows the coefficients of variation in total precipitation across the United States. And I never realized that California is uniquely variable in the United States. So so the first few slides are just sort of giving us a context of California's water situation compared to other states. A lot of the stuff everyone knows, if you have a mismatch between when the water comes and when we need it, there's a mismatch between where the water falls and where it's needed. So it falls in the north and it's needed in the south. And then we have all these water projects that move things around. Drivers of our water system include climate change, population growth, food security, and the challenges that we have to deal with are of our own making, that we have silos, so separation and agencies thinking about how to deal with these issues. And so those are how we think and respond to these changes needs to evolve in some way. This is the worst drought in modern times. It was the driest year on record, 2013. One of the things that the State Board keeps stressing is that one of the lessons from the long drought they had was that they were too slow to respond to the drought, and so that's the big lesson that we get, is to be more proactive in preparing for drought. Then there's two slides of the Sierra snowpack, or lack thereof, comparison of 2013 and 2014, which is pretty impressive. There's a slide that shows the precipitation totals different by years, and you can see where 2014 falls. It's one of the lowest years on record. Then there are graphs that show, so this one that has buff and blue portions of the graph. The blue is the normal, the average for 80 years, and then the dark blue line is 2014, and you can see it's how much lower it is than the average precipitation. And they go through impacts by sector, huge impacts on the agriculture sector. A lot of people out of work, a lot of land fallowed, impacts on drinking water, increased wildfire threats. Environmental threats, so stream flow becomes an issue. So they're starting to see some response to all of the messages to conserve water, but actually, there was a recent report that showed use gallons per person, and the best water areas in the state were Santa Cruz and San Francisco, as I recall. And where the average there is under 30 gallons per person per day, and then there were places down in Orange County,
San Diego,
that were over 300 gallons per person per day. Could use some improvement down there. I think I sat at the state board meeting where this requirement for people to report data per capita was discussed, and I tell you what, the Southern California people were really against it, and now you can see why. So they kept saying it won't mean anything. So anyway, this is a very, I thought this was, this her PowerPoint was very well received, and I'm hardly doing it justice. I encourage everybody to take a look at it. Do you, anyone have any comments about Felicia's PowerPoint? Okay, with that, we're moving on to the executive officer's report.
Good afternoon, Dr. Horn, board members, and public and staff. Thanks for coming. I want to update you on some new developments in the written EO report that's in your packet, and then some other things that are going on that you might find interesting. And I'll end with asking Lori Kemper to join me up here, our assistant executive officer, to give the quarterly violations report, which is, again, also in your packet. Let me start with maybe some logistical things, if I could. I'm going to ask the board to look at Bates Stamps 4-23 in your packet. And what that is our proposed meeting schedule for next year, as well as our standing reports that we revisit each year. The standing reports are pretty much the same ones we had last year, with a new addition on bacteria water quality objectives, which you'll hear a little bit about in item number 6 today. But that is the staff's suggestion to the board, and if you're okay with those changes, adding bacteria and dates, let me know. Or if you have changes that you would like to propose, I'd love to hear.
I have been instructed. I'll let you all figure out by whom, to suggest that it would be nice if our board meeting in November was the first week of November.
That might be a problem if WQCC is the last week of October.
I have explained that to the person who instructed me to do this. I'm hoping that perhaps we could work with that, but that's I have fulfilled my mission.
We'll take that under advisement.
Appreciate it very much.
Okay, well, I'll proceed then with the EO report, and if you have any additional suggestions, please give them to me and staff, and we'll make changes as we go by. In your packet, in my EO report, we gave an update on the Range Management Advisory Committee, which, not to use alphabet soup, but I'm going to call them RMAC. It's just easier to spit out that way. That's Bates Stamps 4-10. And this is actually a meeting that was generated as a result of us proceeding with our grazing regulatory action project that we're doing statewide. But let me tell you about the RMAC first. This is the statewide technical advisory committee for the Board of Forestry. And so they advise the Board of Forestry, but they're the only statewide technical advisory committee. So they're actually providing a valuable service to those of us at the Water Board who are moving ahead with our grazing regulatory project. So we've met with them. They want to work with us and partner with us as we go forward, which we very much would like to do. They're going to take us out on tours of ranches, look at good best management practices, so we welcome that. And we're going to actually ask their help to help us write up some benefits of cattle grazing to the environment and water quality. There's a lot of discussions about how that is helpful to water quality in the environment, but it's not really written down well in a way. So we're going to ask for their help to help us, to move forward with that. We had our first grazing regulatory action listing sessions, I'm going to call it GRAP from this point forward, on November 3rd. And that was with industry and the environmentalists. And Pete, thank you for attending that with us. DDD Adamo also attended that session. The next listening sessions will be this Friday, and DDD Adamo will participate in those again. She's the state board liaison to agriculture, so she will be very active in the statewide policy. And that is with academia and with local governments. Our last listening session will be the tribal representatives on December 12th. And I certainly can, these will be posted up on our GRAP website, so if you want more information. After we have finished this round of listening sessions with the stakeholders, we're going to write up everyone's comments in a very transparent way and post it on the web for everyone to see. After that, we're going to have a second series of sessions regionally in San Luis Obispo, in Redding, and in Bishop, allowing all community leaders and partners and tribes and whomever would like to attend to participate in those listening sessions and give us their input on what a policy should be. The listening sessions are something the state board is doing with all their policy. Rather than start with writing a policy, they're actually listening to stakeholders and saying, what should it look like? What works? What doesn't work? So these are the foundational questions that we are asking in those grazing meetings. And our region is leading the effort with the other regional boards and with the state board. So we're spending a lot of time in our region on this, but I think it's worth the effort. The other thing we're going to do is have a data call-in of scientific studies. We're finding in the early stages of this policy that there's divergent and strong opinions about what the science is and what it says, whether grazing either hurts or harms water quality or helps water quality. So we're having a neutral data call-in from all the scientists, and we likely will have a session to discuss that. So before staff start even crafting what policy might look like, we really will have all the data information available to us so we make good decisions as we move forward. I just want to update this board on that because I know many of you have interest because of our Bridgeport Valley and other areas in our region, but it really is, I mean, every region in the state has issues in this area and is very actively involved. And anyone who wants to be more involved along the way, let me know. I'll plug you into any of these meetings. I'm now going to change the subject to just give you a little tidbit about the PCE pollution in South Lake Tahoe. This is in the southern, near the Y in South Lake Tahoe. There's a write-up in your packet, and with staff's help, they wrote up a proposal for $69,000 in cleanup and maintenance funds to do some investigation, which we did receive from the state board. We're very grateful. We're going to plan to collect groundwater samples from 23 locations in the area and get a contract in place later this year. If the winter weather is not too harsh, which sadly it looks like that may be the case, the investigation can, you know, proceed on time. If not, it'll have to wait until spring. And then we'll have a better sense of who the responsible party or parties could be, and we can move forward with that effort. There are a couple of drinking water wells that have shut down, so it's a grave issue for a small community neighborhood up there. Tahoe Toms is also a report that's in your packet pages 4-20. I don't want to say too much about this site because Lori plans to give you full update in the quarterly violations report that you're going to follow, but I just wanted to keep you in suspense and let you know. I think I sent around pictures of bottled water being delivered to the Mark Twain Hotel, so that's good news. I won't say more, and I'll leave the rest to Lori so she can fill you in. Also in your report are our annual targets. Each of the regional boards are asked at the beginning of each year to give the state board targets. It's been a bit of a rough process over the last couple of years as they get their database and their metrics up, and we've had some issues as I've had all the regional boards of the metrics not quite being there, and I guess under-reporting activities that the regions do. This year we did very well with our targets, as you can see. And I just want to give you the sense of the breadth and the scope of the volume of things that come through our agency. We did 279 inspections, which is quite a few. We had 86 water quality certification orders, 46 recension of permits. So this is really just a small snapshot of some of the things we do with permits, inspections, and all the facilities that we regulate. It doesn't by any means cover all the activities that we do. It's not captured by this. But I just, you know, want to give you a sense of that, and that staff worked very hard to work on the metrics and get everything worked out. And Rebecca did a lot of work on it herself with the database. But I just want to give a kudo to staff who worked so hard on hitting these targets. It wasn't easy. I'm now going to update you on the Upper Echo Lakes Fuels Reduction Project, which is in your bait stamps 4-12. Earlier in the year, the board may recall in the discussion of renewing the timber fuels reduction waiver that some community members came to the board with concerns about Echo Lake. And I committed to the board that we would come back and fill you in on what happens next. So in your packet is sort of a summary of what staff did in terms of working with the U.S. Forest Service and going out and doing inspections and working on those piles, finding some problems out there, but working with the Forest Service to correct those piles. So that's in your packet. In the report, as a follow-up, the board did ask them to move U.S. Forest Service, that is, 7 to 10 slash piles out of the stream environment zones and take steps to ensure that the burn materials are not going to get into Echo Lake and cause a water pollution problem. In mid-October, the Forest Service did indeed move those slash piles and submitted a report and photographs to our staff to document the work was done. From those photographs, our preliminary conclusions that the move piles do not pose a significant threat to water quality. We'll inspect again in 2015 to ensure that the water courses and SEZs are in good stead. And there are citizens up there that have filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Forest Service challenging the project. That's an ongoing litigation that I think they brought forward to the board when they came. It's primarily related to the Endangered Species Act and the NEPA policy issues. But just recently I received a copy of a letter from the plaintiff's legal counsel to the assistant U.S. attorney alleging that the actions of the U.S. Forest Service to move the slash piles, which we requested them to do, was in violation of court order. So I just want to let you know that's out there, but we are cooperating with the Forest Service and working hand-in-hand on that. So, nearshore water pollution, Lake Tahoe. Last week, I took a staff from the California Senate, both budget and policy committees, out on Lake Tahoe to talk about nearshore pollution. We took them around the lake to sites where we might do some monitoring. We talked about the problems that were out there. It was a very good trip. We went to Emerald Bay to see the removal of the mats that were used to eradicate the Asian clam infestation. As you recall, it was cleanup and abatement money that was given to our regional board, as well as other funds to help pay for those mats. They've been out there about 2 years now. Overall, they did a good job. We killed most of the clams out there. There are spots and areas where it didn't work so well, partly because of the boats coming through and the paddle boats ripping up the mats and allowing oxygen underneath. But overall, I think it was a success. And having been out there myself, many of those mats, they pulled up in pretty good stead. So they're going to be reusing them. They figure 5 or 6 more uses out of them. And in fact, our Senate friends actually took a patch of the rubber, and we're going to meet with Carol Mortensen, the director of CalRecycle, to see if she could maybe donate some funds to buy some more mats so we could maybe eradicate more Asian clams in Lake Tahoe. We also visited the Tahoe Keys and talked about the waste discharge requirements that were issued out there and the invasive species problems. I also wanted to let the board know, at a previous board meeting when we actually considered that waste discharge requirement, you may have heard from members from the public who said, well, what about some of the other landowners? Shouldn't they, too, participate in this process? So I at least wanted to get back to the board to report to you that I'd committed that we would meet with them, and we indeed have met with those landowners to participate in the invasive species work, and they seem very, it's promising. There'll be more meetings and more efforts to get them involved. And in January, we hope to provide a report to the board in my EO report on how that's going and what that looks like. So I just want to follow up with you on that. A completely different subject, marijuana. We do a range of issues at this region board, don't we? Quite the range. This month, I sent out letters to some of our biggest landowners in our region, LADWP, Bureau of Land Management, and the U.S. Forest Service. In that letter, I asked for their help in identifying illegal marijuana grows in our region. Most of the grows in our region, I think actually all of them, tend to be in remote areas and associated with illegal drug cartels, as opposed to in the North Coast where some of those are legal grows. We have predominantly illegal grows all in our region. What I did is I asked each agency to identify the marijuana cultivation locations, the size and extent, any known damages that they know of, any vulnerabilities, and any actions taken to date to remediate. And I asked them to give me a contact name and report back to me by January 15th. We hope to work collaboratively with these agencies because they are also victims of these illegal operations, which they do not want on their lands either. So to the extent we can work together to see if we can collaborate on how we can solve these problems, I think that's a good thing to do. As the State Board proceeds this next year with a policy, they're working on the draft for regulating legal grows and inspections, and we just want to be ready when the time comes when they decide to deal with the illegal grows and potentially funding be available to clean up or remediate some of these sites. You can't do that unless you got a list of potential locations, so that's why we're kind of moving ahead in our region to kind of get prepared in the hopes that there might be funding available at some point to deal with this problem. Eric Taxer is lead on this, and there's a statewide task force on marijuana called the Joint Task Force. I'm on that as well. I know. I didn't name it. That's what they call it. But you could ask Chris about that. Chris Kerrigan from Office Enforcement will be here in January to give board a presentation on what's going on statewide on this effort. We'll also give you a little bit more of a report of what we know in our region to be areas of vulnerability. And you could ask Chris why they named it that. So. I'd like to talk about some of our employees. We've had some changes. First, let me start off with our very own Chuck Curtis, who is not here today. He's our long-standing supervisor engineer that you all know and we all love. He's retiring at the end of this year after many years of service. I know it's hard to accept, and many of us, I think many of us are still in denial about that, but it's true. He tells us he is leaving us at the end of the year. He did assure me that he'll be back before this board in January as a member of the public to participate in our climate change workshop. So he'll be back so we could say our proper goodbyes to him. So I want to let all of you know that. With Chuck leaving, I'm happy to announce that Scott Ferguson has accepted the post of supervisor and engineer to replace Chuck following his retirement in December. And right now they're working together sort of, cross-training and learning while they're there. Scott will take over the post that Chuck has always had over core regulatory programs up north, enforcement, special projects, and the Leviathan mine cleanup. We're really lucky to have some as talented as Scott follow footsteps of Chuck. I know Chuck's a tough act to follow, but Scott's very talented, and we're lucky to have him. So congratulations to Scott, even though he's not here today. We, in the Victorville office, they recently hired Cephas Herr. He'll be joining our Victorville office as a new water resources control engineer. This is a new position for us, so we're growing the office a tad. This is in Jay Cass's unit. Cephas has a BS in civil engineering from Cal State Sacramento and a master's in geotechnical engineering from the University of Kansas, so he's really very well versed. As an undergraduate, he worked for DWR, assisting in computer modeling, so he brings some good experience in that, too. And he's had graduate studies work in groundwater cleanup at Kettleman Hills, Offutt, I hope I pronounced it right, Air Force Base in Nebraska, and he's worked in the private sector, too, on soil vapor extraction system and other things, so we're thrilled to have him joining us at the end of the month. So that's a great add to the region, to the Victorville office that could sorely use additional help. Karen Patterson has also joined our Victorville office as a scientific aide, supporting the South Lahontan Regulatory Unit, so we're thrilled to have her. Karen is a certified wastewater treatment operator, so she brings some great talent and experience at the Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation, so we, I guess, borrowed her from Logan. I hope he's okay with that. She has an associate degree from Victor Valley Community College in environmental horticulture and emphasis on environmental studies. She'll be supported in the unit by reviewing the discharger report, self-monitoring reports, assisting staff with special studies. She'll also assist Gassem Porgasini on data analysis for the Hinckley groundwater nitrate study, which you heard about at the last board meeting. So we're thrilled to have her. We're also happy to welcome Darren Witt back to the Leviathan Mine Project from our South Lake Tahoe office. Darren joined us last month as a water resource control engineer, and he picked up where he left off 3 years ago, where he was a student assistant with us back in the day. So he's now a licensed civil engineer, and he's going to add his talents to our Leviathan Project, so we're thrilled to have him. Our Victorville office also... good news and bad news. As you know, we were talking about moving our Victorville office, and plans fell through with the folks that we were working with. But good news is Mike and Rebecca have been looking at a number of sites, and it looks like they've got a handful of promising sites. So, unfortunately, the process begins again. It takes a long time, I must remind you. We were pretty far along the process last time when the negotiations fell through, but those things happen. I'm hoping maybe a silver lining that we get even a better facility out of this. But the next step is for DGS to take a look at some of these potential sites. It does take time. It is a confidential process where they start negotiating with the landowners and seeing what needs to be done to fix the places, how much they will charge. So I can't give you any ideas of what a possible move date will be. It'll take some time, but at least I wanted to let you know that progress is moving forward and that they did find some potential sites. That concludes my EO report. I was going to hand it over to Lori Kemper now, unless you had any questions about any of those items that we discussed or that I discussed earlier.
On the marijuana grows, enforcement of that even by local law enforcement is challenging. We've had several large busts in this area by San Bernardino County. One site they went to initially and were told, oh no, we have the papers, here's our papers, we're legal. The Sheriff's Department staff that was there didn't know any better because it looked legitimate. As we move forward in identifying and enforcement on these, are we looking at a greater like GIS tool that would be available not only to regulators but to law enforcement to help in these areas? It seems like we all need to understand what is legal and what is not legal and, you know, be on the same page as we look at enforcement.
Those are good questions. Let me break them apart. On your question of the GIS, yes, that is part of what they're looking at in terms of the bigger project next year to be able to assess. I guess there's technology that could tell whether it's a cornfield or a marijuana field. So I'm told it's a little bit pricey technology, but it is there, and so they are exploring how to use that fishing game. Also, I don't know if you recall in last year's budget, there was additional PYs given to Region 1 and Region 5 who are doing the most of the work on legal grows and writing a draft permit on that. But they're looking at that well. What is legal? What is illegal? and you're going to hear more about that, and hopefully Chris could tell you a little bit more about the GIS systems that they're looking. But it is difficult. I mean, legal grows and illegal grows, more so illegal because there's no really responsible party you can go after, but they leave quite a mess, and it really has a big impact on the environment, on water quality, on the native life around there. It reminds me a little bit of the beginning days of the meth lab programs, clan labs they were called, when they left a mess there too. And eventually they created a fund at Toxics for clan labs where they just come in and clean it up. I'm hoping someday that might be the direction they'll do with marijuana. They'll have money available, whether you're legal or illegal, if you leave a mess, that there's some funds there to clean up. At least that's what we're advocating. Many of the regional boards are advocating they do that.
I would just add to that, what's legal and what's illegal may change in the next couple of years also.
Yeah. It's a tough issue.
So they're kind of holding back on some of the moving forward until they see what happens with the electorate in 2016. There's some thought that maybe California will go the same way as Washington and Colorado.
But they're not waiting at the state board next year. They're beginning a policy, putting a draft permit out on the street for Region 1 and Region 5 for the legal grows, to at least get them under watch. So, Lori?
Good afternoon. My name is Lori Kemper. I'm the Assistant Executive Officer for the Lahontan Water Board, and I'm going to give you a very brief quarterly violation report since I know we have a big agenda. The report starts on page 4-37, date stamps, and since we skipped the October board meeting, we're a little on the late side. So this is the second quarter of 2014 quarterly violation report, which covers the period from April to June 30th. I can assure you that Scott already has the third quarter report ready to go, but you'll see that in the January meeting. And I also plan on, in February, to do kind of an annual report on the number of violations and enforcement actions for the year 2014. So for this second quarter, back from April through June, we had a total of 64 violations, which was an increase from the previous quarter that we had 48 violations. The three priority one violations are all associated with the city of Barstow's nitrate pollution problems, and those are being addressed through two different cleanup and abatement orders, one that requires replacement water to folks along the Soap Mine Road area, and the other CAO, the other cleanup and abatement order, requires cleanup of nitrate. And we've been working with the city of Barstow on remediation plans there to also include the perchlorate. So unfortunately, that's caused a delay in getting remediation underway, but hopefully we end up with maybe a more comprehensive approach to deal with both nitrate and perchlorate. The priority two violations, of 55 violations in the priority two category, 44 are being addressed. That's an 80% response rate, where we've either required corrective action ourselves or the discharger has already done it. And one of the ones I wanted to highlight there is the city of Hesperia, where we are trying to do at least one municipal stormwater audit each fiscal year down in the Southern California area. And although they're doing some work to be in compliance, they've got a number of issues that need to be addressed. So we'll be getting a notice of violation out to, or some sort of formal notice of the things they need to improve, including some of their ordinances that allow them to do their own inspections and things of that nature. And then mostly I wanted to, the report also identifies a number of pending enforcement actions which are underway or still being developed. But one of the enforcement items that's not listed there is the Tahoe Tom's gas station. And just to give you kind of a chronology, this spring we noticed increased MTBE occurring at the Tahoe Tom's gas station, which is close to state line, just up gradient of the motel you all stay in when you're in South Lake Tahoe. And I know you've heard about this before, but essentially what we did is we saw these numbers going up in the spring. We issued a 13267 order that required some additional investigation. They had a number of monitoring wells in the area that we had told them they no longer had to monitor because they were non-detect for a number of years. So we required them to go back out and sample those, including the Mark Twain Motel well, where we found violations of the drinking water standard for MTBE. And we issued a cleanup order in August that required replacement water. They failed to deliver replacement water in accordance with the order, and that was unfortunate because that was just ahead of the Labor Day weekend. We then issued a notice of violation and met with them October 10th, and right after that, they began providing bottled water to the Mark Twain Motel. They also have since, in the last couple weeks, paid the owner of the Mark Twain Motel for the 45 days of bottled water that he had to pay for. And they also submitted a plan for wellhead treatment at the Mark Twain Motel, which would be activated carbon. They've submitted that plan to us and to the health department and the motel owner, and so it's still under review by the health department. They have continued to treat total petroleum hydrocarbons at the gas station. Basically, in the spring, they turned on a system that had been turned off. Actually, they brought a new kind of above-ground treatment unit because the one that's on the site is so old. It's from a spill that occurred in the 90s originally, and then a second subsequent spill in the early 2000s. So we've determined this is not a new release at the site. It's really addressing old contamination. We also in the cleanup order required that they treat a hot spot off of the property down on Park Avenue. Basically, there's a monitoring well along the road there that had high concentrations of MTBE. They've been adding a reagent to oxidize the MTBE there, and they're getting good results. So we met October 31st and looked at the most recent monitoring reports, and the numbers have all gone down, including at the motel. They're now meeting drinking water standards at the motel, and at the site, the numbers have gone down significantly at the gas station site. And since they turned on this new system, they've reported that they've removed 800 pounds of total petroleum hydrocarbons since the spring at the site. And I just wanted to give you that number because later tonight Lisa will be talking about how much chrome has been removed at Hinckley. So I think it's impressive that that's happened at that site. So essentially they're now in compliance, but we are still considering imposing an ACL for the 45 days of violation when they failed to give us a plan and give the motel owner the water. And the fact that the water quality results are improving, we don't think means they should not put the system in for the motel, because we saw the numbers go up in the spring, and it may just be a condition of the current drought. So we did talk to them about some additional investigation between the gas station and the motel to try to figure out where the bulk of the off-site contamination is. So they've just given us a report that staff is reviewing. So that's the heads up on Tahoe Tom. Any questions? That's all I have for your report.
Mm-hmm. 800 pounds?
Yeah.
Where was that lurking?
At the site there, at Tahoe Tont, that little postage stamp.
There was years of pumping treat.
Exactly. The well was not pumping much, but there was also, so they were pumping from, this 800 pounds came out of two separate extraction wells on the site. And with this newer equipment, higher vacuum, because I think the system they had was just eking out just dribbles of water. And so this new system, which Lisa later, you could ask her details about the new system, but it's newer technology and it's a lot stronger vacuum. And that was why they brought it on to the site, and they're really pleased with how it's working.
I have one other question, which was on page one of the current report, which is the denied entry for the Atlas Auto Salvage. What are you doing about that?
Good question.
The last line on the first page.
Atlas Auto Salvage denied access for an industrial stormwater it was an industrial stormwater inspection. And Mike is still here. I'm so glad he can answer that question.
Good afternoon. I'm Mike Plasiak, supervising geologist for the Victorville office. I think what we've got to do is look at that violation and a little bit more closely. The reason being is staff was denied entry when they went up to the site. However, they were asked to arrange for a meeting or arrange for entry to come in at a different time. So I've questioned that, whether or not what we do is when we notice a violation, we put that right into the system. And then as we work through the sausage making, some things fall out, some things stay in. I think that one just needs to be looked at a little more closely. We're going to get in there.
Any other comments or questions? I just want to say how much the quarterly violations report has improved over the years. So all the new formatting changes, having a table of pending enforcement cases, all of these changes make it much easier for me, speaking just for me, to understand what's going on. So thank you for all those improvements.
I will share that with Scott first.
Now we're up to the Antelope Valley Salt Nutrient Management Plan.
Thank you.